Hey, Jacob.
Hey, Dad.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. And you know what?
What?
I'm excited today. You know
no
why?
No way.
You know why?
Why?
Because me and Jacob here, me and number one son,
uh-huh.
We are living that bachelor life.
Yeah, we are. Hell yeah. Yeah.
There's nobody telling us what to do.
Nobody.
We do what we want.
And we leave no survivors.
It's game on over here.
Oh yeah, for real.
You know, little baby Dukers?
Gone.
See ya, little baby Dukers.
Deuces, Duke.
Where's little baby Dukers? Oh, I have to go compete at the National Speech and Debate Tournament. I'm such a nerd. Okay, you go do that. Have fun. Bye-bye.
See ya, nerd.
You remember Katie, your sister?
Nope. Don't even remember.
Yeah, she never comes home.
She ditched us forever, like three times in a row.
In a row.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. She comes home only to update the poop board.
Or if I lie to her and tell her fish died.
We may or may not have suggested that there was some sort of domestic disturbance with the fish, K-Dog and Frankie.
Uh-huh.
And she may or may not have come home to check on them. Does she come to check on us?
Nope.
No, nope. There's no checking on us.
But you know what? She doesn't even need to check on us.
Doesn't need it.
Because we're living the bachelor life.
Living la vida loca. You know what we did yesterday? Because we could.
Tell
me. We dishes.
Actually, yeah, we did.
Two loads. Two loads. What now?
Awesome. Like two chains.
Yeah. Yeah. I only got one, though. It's probably hard to see on the video. It's even harder to see on the podcast.
In the time that Katie and Duke have both been gone.
Which has been amazing.
We have just gone through and really just binged through a lot of shows that are not kid friendly.
We dedicated. We said, hey, when they're gone and it's just us.
Uh-huh.
To vibrant, intelligent men with good jobs.
Great jobs.
Wonderful senses of humor.
The funniest.
Outstanding personalities.
And phenomenal physical prowess.
It's a little bit intense. We said, you know what we're going to do while they're gone, because we're a father and son, we're going to go find us a mommy and a daughter.
Hell,
we're
going to
hook
up
that double date.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're headed for.
So if you're a mom and a daughter out there and you want to get in on a piece of this.
Whoa.
We're here.
Yeah, that we're here for.
And we do the dishes.
Sometimes. Not very often. There's a reason we did two loads. And there's only two of us. It might have been a minute. All right. Well, that's our life. So, yeah. Good podcast.
Boom. You're caught up. We'll see you next week.
We go from Shacky T to wild and free.
Yes.
All right. Well, today we have been talking about what to do next for so long.
Uh-huh.
And I have like 1,000 things I want to do next.
You do have a long
list. I've got quite the list. I want to do Columbine so bad. It is on the list.
Yeah.
And I want to do Kitty Genovese. And I'm sure your thought is, who? You don't even like cats. Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. And
sorry,
there was a point.
I had to put that together in my head.
There was a point where I had this thought that, you know, I do a lot of American topics and I don't branch out into the world that often. And then I thought, so what? Like, if I just do Dark Side of American History, we could be here for generations.
That is true.
America's awesome and we do some stupid stuff.
We do some dark things
and
in our history.
And one of the things that, as we've been talking and trying to set up things and different shows and different ideas, is it's interesting to me the kind of emphasis that different people put on different dates, sometimes very much on purpose. Like, hey, I'm going to do a thing and I'm going to do it on this date. Like maybe you have friends who have a birthday and you will celebrate their birthday on their birthday. There's no cake the day before. There's no party the day after.
Yeah.
You're going to celebrate on their day or it's not going to happen.
Personally, I like to take up the whole week.
Well, when you're living your lifestyle.
I have a long birthday.
Right? It wasn't that long of a birth. You were birthed relatively quickly.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a big time for the world.
We've been rejoicing ever since. I know I have. So today we're gonna start with a date. It matters a lot in American history.
Oh yeah.
Right there from the beginning.
Uh-huh.
It's our April 19th.
Yep.
And as some of you have probably immediately ascertained, April 19th, there's only one thing he could be talking about. And you're right.
I mean, it could be two.
It could be three.
You're right.
I want to talk about Lexington and Concord.
Uh-huh.
Okay. For some of you neophytes to history, what I'm talking about is the shot heard around the world. Heard around the world.
That started a revolution.
Doom. Boom. Happened.
Thank you, Schoolhouse Rock.
Take that, England. Now what? So, it's interesting to me that this entire war, the Revolutionary War, it began as sort of a botched police action. Okay, we live in a time where police actions get screwed up a lot.
Oh yeah, they're great at botching them.
And there's way more successful police actions than there are messed up ones. Mm-hmm. But when you do a police thing correctly, nobody wants to hear about that. It's boring. So unfortunately, for those in law enforcement, you really only hear your name when something bad happens, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, hey, there's a school shooting in Texas at Uvalde. And the police sat around for a while before they got in there and figured out what was going on and did anything. Well, that's all over the news.
Yep.
Definitely.
Everywhere.
I talked to our own school cop when that happened, and he was just like so mad. He's like, hey, I decided a long time ago I'm going to get fired or killed. I am not going to let people shoot up kids in my school. Love that guy.
I like that school cop.
Yeah. Yeah. He's solid. That's how we do in Idaho. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to play these games.
That's very true.
As though, you know, like in anywhere else, oh, well, we're not going to protect our kids because we are going to play those games. I know that's not a thing. I probably shouldn't trivialize those kind of moments because it's all bad.
Come on, guys. It's a figure of speech. Cut the guy a break.
So here's our police action on April 9th.
Yep.
I'm sorry, 19th.
19th.
1775. There are some people that they're causing trouble.
Mm-hmm.
For the British and the colony of Boston. Yep. They're causing trouble in Boston. Who would have thought?
Who would have known?
Right? We had a massacre. We had a tea party. Nobody throws a party like a Boston party because the Boston party don't stop. So... they want to catch some of the leaders of the Sons of Liberty because at the time after the Boston Tea Party, they like locked down Boston straight up. Martial law. We're in charge. And it looked like they were, but they weren't. Because while the British are, quote, in charge and they have all the elected positions and they have all the police force, there is in that same time and place a shadow government. Led largely by the Sons of Liberty, which is John Hancock and Sam Adams, who's famous for more than an American brand of beer. So Sam Adams, he's basically running Boston behind the scenes. It turns out that while many people in Boston were, you know, still wanted to be British, they weren't trying to start a war or anything, they kind of hated the fact that a bunch of redcoats were telling them what to do. Who'd have thought?
Yeah. It's what they get for wearing such gaudy coats.
It's got to be hot, right? That's humid on the coast.
Uh-huh.
Those things are made of wool, kids. So they decide, hey, we got to put a stop to this. There are two things we need to do. We have a tip because there's lots of spies. The Sons of Liberty have a gazillion spies. Go Team Paul Revere. The British, they got a gazillion spies too. So there's this whole cloak and dagger thing going on. Maybe it's a little bit like, we've got to get Osama bin Laden. It took us forever to get him because we spent most of the time trying to, where's he actually going to be at? Can we actually get there, make it successful? That was a whole other thing. We could do an episode on catching Osama.
I figured that once we had gotten outside of the U.S., that's when all of the terrorism stuff.
You don't have to go outside the U.S. to deal with Al-Qaeda because they will come to you.
That is true.
All right? All right. So we decide that the British decide we've got a chance. We have good intel that Sam Adams and that John Hancock, who aside from having a really large signature, he's super rich. At least he was before they shut down the port of Boston. He might have been the richest guy in America. So when you shut down the port and you make your money by smuggling and shipping and those kinds of things, you're probably annoyed.
Yeah.
So they find out they're supposed to be in Concord. Now, Concord's not super far away. It turns out they didn't just run around and have secret meetings in the middle of the city. Why?
Because there's red coats everywhere.
Everywhere. In a town of 15,000 and maybe less, because after they shut the port, a lot of people start leaving town. Because what are you going to do? There's no work.
Yeah.
So a town of 15,000-ish, there's 5,000 soldiers. You get one cop for every three people. Men, yep. Women, or children.
Boom.
Hard to get away with a lot in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
So they're meeting in these little towns in the outskirts. One of them's Concord. And there's more than just a tip that Hancock and Sam Adams are there. Wait for it. The most American thing of all. You ready? Guess what else is there?
Guns.
Guns.
Yeah.
And what do the British decide to do? What do they decide to do? We're going to go take those guns from these Yankees.
That's a great idea.
What could go wrong, right? Like, you know, they got a little mad when we shut down their port and we imprisoned some people and we don't let them make any money. I am sure taking their guns away, that's not going to bug them.
Yeah.
And we jest, but if you're these 5,000 redcoats, yeah, you're strong and you're in charge of the city. There's a reason you don't run around out in all these little towns. Because out there in the woods, everybody's got a gun.
Yep.
You had to back then. There's hunting and all those kind of things. But we're some gun-toting fools in America.
Oh, yeah.
And back then, very much so, too. You're not trying to be out in the middle of the night in the little small towns and small groups of soldiers. Because they'll get you. If we took that, like, Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden thought, it's like when we were in the war in Afghanistan. Okay, yeah, you're going to send big units of troops and lots of superior firepower to attack targets. But if you're just running around with a squad of 8 or 12 guys and you're not sure what's going on out in the country,
you're screwed.
You're in trouble. Yeah. Like, that stuff is dangerous.
Uh-huh.
So we've got that similar dynamic way back then at the start of America. We're not even a real America yet. We're not even baby America.
Not even.
We are... we're pregnant, we're 9 months in, we're dilated to a 4. That's America. We're right there.
But even then, don't take our guns.
Okay, now if I'm going to send some people up into this town that's, I don't know, it's 18 miles away or something, I should know the distance. I've been there, but I don't remember. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not just going to send a small squad. Because I might get jumped in the middle of the woods.
Yeah.
So I want overwhelming firepower.
Yep.
There's a problem if I send overwhelming firepower.
They know you're coming.
Yeah, it's hard to hide. 5,000 guys in bright red coats marching through the, you know, out of Boston Harbor where they're kind of holed up because the Navy has them in good shape there. But away we go into the countryside. You might not know where they're going, but you know they're not there anymore.
Yep.
Okay, and I'm not claiming to be Miss Cleo or some other kind of clairvoyant. I am not Nostradamus. But I feel like if I see thousands of redcoats leaving Boston, I might go,
I wonder where they're
going
to go.
I wonder where they're going. You know, they really hate the Sons of Liberty guys.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if there's a connection.
They specifically hate John Hancock for how big he spells his name.
Well, I don't think that was... That's not a thing yet. They don't sign the Declaration of Independence for like another year, Jacob.
Okay. Jokes don't need to be historically accurate
The time. It's a problem, Jacob. It's a problem. Anyway. So they're going to send all these people. And just like you talked about, it's not a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You should have known that you're going to get caught sending that many people. You should have just taken that into your calculus of, are we actually going to do this? And maybe they did. But they did try as best they can. If you're going to move a bunch of people in bright red coats, what time of day might you go?
Probably night.
Nighttime's better.
It sounds
bright red looks a lot like dark at night. So if you can get most of this damage done, most of your marching, if you can get there in the middle of the night, maybe you could still have some kind of surprise.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, we know how this ended, right? We got Paul Revere and is it Sam Watkins and a few other people that are like, oh, look, here they go. I'm not sure where they're going, but let me ride off ahead and tell everybody. If you're going to tell everybody that the British Army's on the move, who are you definitely going to tell?
The people with the guns.
You're going to tell the people with the guns. You're also going to tell John Adams. Yep. Or not John Adams, his brother Sam. And John Hancock. You're going to tell them because, A, they might organize whatever you're going to do in response. But also, they might want to leave. Because if all those troops are coming for them, that might be a great time to go elsewhere.
Yep.
Well, this is... There you go. We got it. We set out in the middle of the night. People know what's going on. Geography comes into play. Exciting. On the way to Concord, they go through our cute little baby town of Lexington. So you weren't there, but when we went back to see Katie in college at Boston,
yeah,
we took a little trip up to the Lexington Green, this big, weird triangle in the middle of town.
Okay.
And got a tour, and, you know, here's the street. Some of the streets are the same streets. They're paved now, obviously. The buildings are different. There's actually way more trees there now. When I was talking to the historians at, like, the visitor center there at Lexington, I'm thinking, oh, there's probably a lot more trees and cover back in the day, mm-hmm, because, you know, there's houses and businesses there now. But he said, no, there really wasn't, because all the houses around there and all the buildings around there are made of wood. Mm-hmm. Oh, so they had chopped down all the local trees, either to make boards and buildings or to burn.
That makes sense.
So, yeah, it made total sense, but it's opposite of what you might normally think, at least, yeah, for me. I mean, I'm a historian, doesn't mean I'm a smart one. So there you go. They march through there, and there's an altercation, and mostly there's a few, like 70-ish Minutemen. Not the official ones, they're all well-trained, but just kind of the like, hey, dude, you got a gun? Let's go out there and let's look and hard.
Blast some lobster.
Let's go
tails.
Look hard at the lobster backs. I don't think they're attempting to like, we're going to hold them right here, man. We're taking them out. But you know how it is. If somebody, yeah, from out of town comes and they're going to start giving you trouble.
You and grab your boys and
you mean mug them.
Yeah.
Now you're going to like let them know you at least exist.
Yeah.
So they do. And they're like, hey, you guys need to leave. And somebody shoots. Nobody knows who.
Uh-huh.
After the shooting, there's some dead Americans.
Uh-huh.
Are they Americans yet? No, they're still British citizens. There's some dead British people who happen to live in America.
Yep.
And the ones that are left, they run and scatter. Mm-hmm. Because, hey, it was fun to mean mug until the bullets started flying.
Oh, yeah.
And now there's like 1,000 of you and like 65 left of us.
Yep.
Peace. Deuces. And the British just, poof, they move right on to Concord. Mm-hmm. And by the time they get there, well, you know, the people marching aren't going to outrun people on horses. So after the actual shooting starts, people go everywhere. Hey, the British aren't just marching. They're killing fools.
They're killing people.
They're killing fools. And that gets everybody all kind of riled up. So they make it, though. They make it to Concord.
Mm-hmm.
Bright and early in the morning. Sun's just coming up. Surprise! It wasn't a surprise. No surprise.
Everybody saw this coming.
Hancock. Gone. Adams. Gone. The guns, like, where are they at? They did find a few weapons there. Like some old, small, a couple cannon, a couple like musket rifles. And they're more muskets than rifles back then. And they're mad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're ticked off because we've marched all night. I probably didn't sleep well. These idiots shot at us back in Lexington. We're here to catch these guys. They're not even here.
Yeah.
We're here to grab all these guns. They're not even here. Like, this turns into, like, waking up the citizens, like, y'all gonna cook us breakfast? Like, we didn't meet any of our goals, but you're gonna make us some bacon and eggs. They burn some stuff. They're just, it's like a frustration thing on the part of the British. But because they burn this, you know, a building, not the town, they're not raising the town. They're just, mm-hmm, burning a building, burning some of the weapons. This little frustrate, well, we were here, we're gonna do something, dang it.
We're gonna burn that building.
But it's weird because Concord is in like a little bowl geographically. It's just down in this little bowl and it's surrounded by trees, though maybe not as many.
Maybe not as many.
Maybe they chopped them all up too. But it's in this little bowl. So when these people who were everywhere are like, oh my gosh, the British are going to Concord and they're killing people and they're going to check it out and see what's going on, is they approach where Concord is, they see smoke rising up from this, where the town is, and they think the town's gone. They think that thing got razed. So now people are running all over the countryside. Mm-hmm. Hey, not only are the British on the move, and not only are they killing fools, they're burning towns to the ground. I mean, people lose their mind.
At that point, it also becomes popcorn.
Right. Oh, yeah.
One dude says, oh, hey, you know, we saw smoke. And the next dude says, they burned down everything.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty soon, everything east of the Mississippi is on fire.
Uh-huh.
10 trillion people have died, and they're working with the Native Americans that, you know, everybody's still afraid of. That's still a problem back then.
Yep.
Also, the Native Americans would have said, yeah, that's a problem. Get the crap off our land and leave us alone. So it goes really bad.
Yep.
And now, by the time some people start showing up in mass, the British are like, whoa, dude, there's like all of a sudden a lot of people here. We're just trying to march home to Boston and get this over with. It's kind of a failure. We're annoyed. And now people are shooting at us in numbers that could really jack us up. They haven't been up all night.
Nope.
They're not frustrated and tired. They're pissed. they're looking for real for revenge and blood.
Yep.
And it's like a death race to get these men back to Boston. And from Boston, they send other troops to like meet them partway and help protect them to get in. But by the time they get back, there's, you know, they had, oh, maybe 1,500 to 2,500. They had several, almost a couple thousand troops engaged one way or another by the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time all these people are chasing them back and shooting at them all the way back, by the time they get back to Boston, A, there's a whole bunch of British people dead.
Mm-hmm.
A couple hundred that are dead, wounded, missing. So you've got a pretty big casualty rate. But you have over 10,000 patriots that just surround you. They just park on all the hills around you. They can't come down and get you because the British Navy's right there and they will light a fool up.
Yeah.
But the British Navy doesn't have enough guns to chase you off that high ground.
Yeah.
So it's this giant stalemate where the British are like, you guys go home. There's nothing to see here. And the Americans are like, I'm not sure what to do, but I'm going to do it right here.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what leads to everybody losing their crap, and we have a Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm.
Or a War of Rebellious Colonies, I guess, if you're the British. I don't know what they call the Revolutionary War. That war where we lost our entire future? That's right. I don't know. I mean, they helped a little in the World Wars. Good job with Churchill. He was cool.
Yeah,
Churchill was. They've done some nice stuff.
He gave Shackleton the go-ahead.
There you go! Oh. So we like that. So that's April 19th. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
If you're going to do something on April 19th that involves, let's go get some guns from people and arrest some fools, maybe you should think about this thing here. Because it turns out history doesn't always repeat itself, but there are things that seem to circle
around. Apparently, there are some parallels.
Right. We have some similarities. So there's one April 19th,
mm-hmm.
but the one you're like, this is the longest intro ever. Can you shut up and get to your topic now? Hey, if we accidentally talk about history on our way to other history, that's a bonus for you, people.
Yeah, come on. You tuned in. You knew what you were getting yourself into. You're welcome.
If you were having a bachelor pad weekend like we are, you'd be on board. We wouldn't be dealing with this.
You would just be enjoying this euphoric history lesson that we just stumble upon on our way to looking for some other stuff we were going to talk about.
You're welcome. So April 19th is super important for a couple other reasons.
Yep.
One, total coincidence, okay? Super coincidental. You know what happened on April 19th in 1993?
Am I answering?
Yeah, if you know.
It's Waco.
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 We end the raid. I mean, we do the raid. We end the siege on the Branch Davidians at Waco, Texas.
Uh-huh.
Which, help me remember, what was that whole thing about?
See, what was it, the FBI? The FBI thought that they had some guns that they weren't supposed to have in there.
We got to go take their guns.
We got to go take those guns.
Also.
Uh-huh.
We got to arrest that leader guy.
Yeah. For...
Well, for guns.
For guns.
Also, there's some reasonable evidence to suggest that he's getting a little frisky with young ladies. The Branch Davidian version would be he marries lots of women. Some of them are younger than others. But when we talk about this in real terms, what we call that is he's raping children.
Yep.
So that's a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem.
As a dad, I'm like, hey, this guy's raping kids. I'm like, let's go get him.
Yeah.
I understand that. So I guess I get it, the emotional push behind that. But it's so crazy that here we are the same date. Mm-hmm. Couple hundred years and change later.
Yep.
And these circumstances fall apart for some of the same reasons.
Uh-huh.
You sent plenty of people, but you're not surprising anybody. Mm-mm. And it kind of backfires on you in the grand scheme of things. So I think that's where we're at. There you go. There's our two.
But wait.
What?
There's more.
Wait. No, and this last one's not an accident.
No, last one's totally on purpose.
And this is where sometimes the people who believe in dates and times and connections, like, you can make that a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened with the Oklahoma City bombing. Mm-hmm. Because that was chosen to be on the anniversary of the raid at Waco. Because... you know, the government overstepped. And if we're going to teach the government not to overstep, we should blow up a daycare?
I mean, it was more than a daycare they blew up.
Yeah.
But yeah. But the daycare was included.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care. So, do I want to do an episode on the Oklahoma City bombing? Absolutely.
Heck yeah.
It's on the list. You cannot do an episode on Oklahoma City... Mm-mm. Without talking about Waco.
Yep.
And frankly, it's hard to do one on Waco. We're probably going to have to sprinkle in some Ruby Ridge.
Yep.
These three things, and I think Frontline did an incredible job demonstrating how they tie together. They really are very much interrelated. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying anything caused the other, but three important events that I would encourage you, if you find the story... and what we talk about with Waco interesting, to consider looking at Ruby Ridge in Idaho, as well as the Oklahoma City bombing. And there's other stuff too. Like, there's random weird tie-ins to different kind of white nationalist groups.
Even a lot of just regular shootings are very... those people all know about Waco. And, you know, they have done the research on it, and they take that personally as well.
Yeah, I think the Columbine, they planned to do that on April 19th, but they didn't get to it because something came up. They had to delay it a day, something crazy like that. There's tie-ins between Waco, these other things, Ruby Ridge, and the Olympic Park bombing. Mm-hmm. Like... they're not all super direct, but man, they are involved. If you're a conspiracy theorist, I'm not, okay? You can make a living. But if you are, Waco's right here at the middle of it all.
Yep.
And that's why we call this episode...
Waco.
The nexus of everything.
You know, and... I guess I can save this for a little bit later, but... the... you know, kind of the thing that makes Waco the nexus of everything is the publicity that it gets, right?
Absolutely. 100%.
And if we're going to backpedal back to Lexington and Concord, then, I mean, that's the shot heard around the world, right?
Yeah.
Like, the newspapers blew that up. That got all kinds of publicity, too.
Yeah.
So that's another tie-in right here with the April 19th thing. Like, there's a lot of parallels between these two.
There are. There are, definitely. And... I guess without further ado, we're going to dive in a little bit to the Branch Davidians, David Koresh. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he's not born David Koresh. Nope. We're going to call him David Koresh. That's what he was. That's what he's known by. I'm just going to stick with that, because if we start switching names back and forth, that's going to be weird. So we're going to go with David Koresh. He chose that name. It has some religious significance from some Old Testament biblical stuff. Good on you.
Yep.
Good with it. Whatever. I think before, I mean, what do people know about Waco? Like, most people know a little bit. There's several there's a new documentary just recently that came out on Netflix.
Yeah.
I'm happy to report there's nothing new in that documentary.
No, nothing at all.
I've been studying Waco since it happened. It was a hugely interesting part of my younger life because it was so weird and because it got so much news coverage.
Yep.
And there, I learned nothing new from the latest Netflix documentary on Waco, which is not to discount it, right? If you don't know anything, that's a great place to start.
Yeah.
But if you know a whole bunch, I don't know if that's going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
So what are our key points of Waco? What do we need to know?
Well, from what I had known growing up, I mean, I grew up being your kid, so I knew a little bit more about it than a lot of other people.
You poor guy.
But, like, a lot of my friends, the stuff they know about Waco, they've seen in, like, the Netflix docudrama. You know, they know, oh, the FBI goes to try and take some guns from a cult and ends up burning the building down. That's kind of the gist of what a lot of people know. But there's really, really a lot more to it than just that.
There's a lot of moving pieces. If you are interested in the play-by-play-by-play, this is probably not the podcast for you. Because that's not what interests me. You can pull that stuff off on Wikipedia and get the breakdown. And there's so many different sites if you're interested in the conspiracy theories. But the idea of what happened at Waco is super interesting to me. Because we have guns and gun culture.
Uh-huh.
We have religion.
Yep.
That's the biggest part that was different besides the news coverage. Mm-hmm. You had way more news coverage for Waco than you ever did for Ruby Ridge. Much smaller story.
Mm-hmm.
And religion's a part of the Ruby Ridge story. But mostly it's more white supremacist. It's a lot easier to say, oh, that guy's a Nazi and write him off.
Mm-hmm.
Than to have to deal with something that's a church. Okay. Now, conveniently, most of the papers, most of the people who talk about it, they don't call it a church. What do they call it?
A cult.
They call it a cult. Okay. We might differ here, but to me, the only difference between a cult and a religion is, you know, how big, how long they've been around, how much acceptance do people have of it. You could be a really large church. Like if you take the Church of Scientology, that's really, really big. But most people view that as a cult.
Yeah.
Okay? And you're like, well, that's not fair. You shouldn't be judged just by what other people think of you. That's 100% what people think a cult is. When Jesus started his ministry, his teachings among a bunch of Jewish people, he was a cult.
Uh-huh.
Him and his followers were in a little Christian, though that wouldn't have been the name then, cult. And at some point after Justinian and the Romans adopt Christianity, okay, it's not a cult anymore. Now everything else is the cult. If you don't like that, I'm sorry, but that's what I'm dealing with. Mm-hmm. So for much of what I'm going to talk about regarding the Branch Davidians, I don't even like to call them a cult. I think it makes people want to discount them. They're not people. People don't join cults. Weak-minded crazies join cults. So too much baggage goes with that word. Mm-hmm. I'm comfortable that that's a religion.
Yeah.
Even if they do weird stuff I don't agree with, right? Like, mm-hmm. whatever thousands of years ago in Mexico when they're chopping people's hearts out and watching them bleed out on an altar by the thousands, mm-hmm. okay, that seems a little cultish.
Yeah, you know, okay. Sacrificing a virgin to a volcano, that's kind of culty.
That seems different. I don't like that. I might have some judgments on that. But among their peers and in their time, they wouldn't have thought that for sure.
Yeah.
And that's going to be another big thing to this whole story is, if you're in some sort of group, religion or any other kind of group, yeah, I mean, you don't feel like you're the one that's messed up. you always feel like it's everybody else projecting that on you or whatever. So this is not to say that I think every kind of group or religion is okay. All right. What matters to me is the level of control. So there are some people who define a cult in terms of the control element. How do you control your people? Okay. Control is a weird word to define, mm-hmm. right? Like if we persuade people, that might be good. Peer pressure could be good. Peer pressure could be bad, right?
Yeah.
But most people don't think, oh, peer pressure, you're in a cult.
Yeah.
Three of my friends want to play basketball. I want to play football. They're like, damn you to heck, you're in a cult. Or dang me to heck because I changed my mind. Well, if I change my mind, I'm succumbing to their mind control.
Yeah.
Okay, that's maybe not it. But there are ways, and you see this a lot in just personal relationships. A child abuser is going to exert some control through that grooming process, through threats to keep people from ratting them out. Abusive domestic partners, they're going to use control. Okay. If I'm on a first date, am I trying to persuade somebody? Yeah, I'd like to persuade you to like me, maybe.
Yeah.
Right? That's a real thing. So if you're that mother-daughter combo out there we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. we're not here to control you.
No.
No, that's not what we're about.
We're just here for the charm.
But we'd like you to persuade you that, I mean, look, we're pretty cool.
We're pretty cool.
So cool. All right. Anyway, if it was Tuesday, we'd be like, it's two for Tuesday.
Call.
Anyway. So to me, more important than calling anything a cult is, let's talk about what are the levels of control that someone tries to exert. And David Koresh, through his Branch Davidian, the way he teaches, the way he runs his church, uses a lot of controlling things. He has a lot of controlling tendencies to make people do what he wants.
Yep.
Or at least strongly encourage them. So that's a real thing. Isn't that so much better to talk about?
It's way better than doing the play-by-play of what happened. Like, we could just read that off the internet. But, I mean, when we get to actually discuss, like, the control element, then yeah.
So I've based a lot of my ideas about what that looks like in groups, this control element, this idea of mind control. But it's on that same continuum as persuasion from a book by David Hassan. And it's called Combating Cult Mind Control. I read this book repeatedly after you were born. So we lived in California at the time. So I'm early 2000s. First time I read this book. And it just struck a chord with me. I was like, oh, here's where things in a group, whether it's a church or a business or a relationship, are okay, and here's where people are actually trying to do something else. Here's where people are trying to exert control over you. I found it really interesting. Mm-hmm. I gave a little church talk to the youth once based on some of what was in this book. And it wasn't like, oh my gosh, watch out for cults, you're all going to die. It was, hey, if you see these types of things happening, it might be somebody's trying to control you. Mm-hmm. So as we talk about the Branch Davidians, I think it's important to consider they're all people who at some point chose to look for religion for whatever reason.
Yep.
And they find what they're looking for, at least initially, in what David Koresh is laying down. And as everything went down, the people who survived Waco, some of them are very, oh, it was bad, I was wrong, it was messed up, here's the reasons I can see now. But and lots of people aren't. Lots of people are like, no, I still believe what was being taught. They're like, they're true believers of what was getting laid down.
Yeah.
It's hard for me, as and some of the stuff, some of them say it's hard to grasp. We're like, how can you still feel that way after this and this happened? But people do. People believe what they believe. Mm-hmm. And accepting that gives us a better lens, I think, to view what's going on at Waco. So, Dave Koresh.
Yep.
The guitarist.
Dude's got skills.
He's got skills.
Sometimes you just gotta You just got to seek God through music, you know?
He has a couple skills and abilities that are going to be common for people to use to persuade others.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't always mean they're doing it in a wrong way to try and control others, but mm-hmm. you'll see what I mean. One thing that he has is a near photographic memory, at least for text.
Does so he really? I didn't know that.
He can pull up chapters from the Bible and quote them very accurately.
Dang.
Okay?
Yeah.
For whatever reason, he can just remember that. If you are a religious person, seeing someone who can quote the Bible so much adds a certain amount of authenticity, authority mm-hmm. to what they're saying. You're like, wow, this guy really knows his Bible.
Mm-hmm.
He must know Christianity. If there's something different he's laying down as how to do it, maybe he's right, because he sure can quote the whole, you know, book of Ephesians,
mm-hmm.
and I can maybe come up with a verse. Maybe. So, interesting gift. He didn't know he had that initially. When he's in school, definitely didn't, right?
Yeah.
Because I guess he didn't care. That's also interesting. Oftentimes we find people that are good at things, you know, when they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think I trained truck drivers for UPS for about, oh, I don't know, 10 years. The semi-truck drivers. And when I'm on a truck with them, like, I can spit out the Smith system of driving, and I can tell you chapter and verse how you're supposed to do everything. I can tell you all the rules of the road. I can tell you the theory behind it. And then I can get behind the wheel and do it. When I'm driving home from work, Detroit lean, one hand on the wheel, texting my wife, not paying any attention, running red lights. I'm not the worst driver on earth because I have developed some good habits, but I was not as good of a driver going to or from UPS or anywhere else as I was when I was under their employ.
Mm-hmm.
When it was my job, I held myself to this higher standard. I've always been able to remember stuff pretty good. Came in handy when I had to learn all that stuff for UPS. It comes in handy, yep. You know, I did public speaking debate as a kid. It's great to have a good memory for that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask me to remember anything about math. Don't know, don't care. If it's a book, it has to be a book I care about, or not only will I not remember it, it's hard for me to read it.
Yep.
So he's got that selective ability that once he realizes he can apply to something he cares about, it makes some things click.
Mm-hmm.
Dude is also, I think, a little shifty or conniving or able to see where his opportunities are and willing to go a little to the extreme to get them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the former leader of his, I mean, the Branch Davidians are an offshoot of a Seventh-day Adventist group, a congregation. So part of the Seventh-day Adventist breaks off from them,
mm-hmm.
becomes the Branch Davidians. They're led by this, you know, like, 60-year-old woman. I mean, her husband, I guess, was the pastor. I don't even know what they call it. Their pastor, their leader.
Yeah.
And he died, and his wife took over. And while David Koresh is, you know, 19, 20 years old, he's like, I'm going to hook up with the leader here.
Yeah.
Who's 60. That's an odd, I mean,
it's a little weird, but you
go
know,
Cougar.
That's
go
an
Cougar.
Age gap.
Right?
But, you know, if that's your thing, go for it.
It seems likely that this was not just that David Koresh had a thing for the more mature women.
Yeah. And that becomes very clear after he takes her spot.
Right? Right? Because he's not chasing 60-year-olds ever again. We will not have trouble with him looking for older women as soon as he gets in charge.
No.
But he does get in charge. It's a little crazy hectic. He's got, like, with the woman's biological son, when he tries to take over, he's like, I'm the rightful heir to be the leader of this congregation.
Uh-huh.
David's like, no, they have a shootout. go Texas. Let's do this old school. So bullets are flying and people are threatening people. And at some point the guy's like, I'm only going to believe you're in charge if you raise somebody from the dead. And there's like an attempt to stage that. I mean, craziness. Okay. This is all before David Koresh is in charge of the Davidians at Waco. And what we, this is all the backstory.
Yeah. This is just him getting there.
So he's willing to do some interesting things.
Uh-huh.
Everybody says he's really personable.
Oh yeah.
He can walk into a room and just start talking to people, and people kind of like him.
Anytime you hear any story about, like, you know, these cults or cult leaders or anything, they're always super personable, very charming. They can get along with everybody.
It doesn't even have to be charming, but there's always something about him. Yeah. If you listen to stories about Hitler, okay, before he was the big wig, mm-hmm. when he's still coming up and the Nazis are coming to power, people say that when he met you, he would take your hand to shake your hand and just hold it too long while he looked in your eyes. And it was a little uncomfortable, but after it was uncomfortable, people felt like he was connecting with them. Mm-hmm. That extra length of time in that moment somehow made a connection with this eye contact, the contact with the hands. And it really disarmed people about maybe some of their reservations about him, that they, I mean, people hear about Hitler before they meet him and they develop some ideas, even when it's all new. So they always have something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so, okay, I don't want this on the pot. Mr. Andrews thinks he's jealous of Hitler. I am not jealous of Hitler. I'm not jealous of David Koresh, but I have often thought how hard it is for me when I go into a room full of strangers. I hate that so much.
Yeah.
There's nowhere I would like to be less than that. That's hell to me. A room full of strangers and I have to go meet them all. I don't like that. If you put me in front of 1,000 strangers and say, give a speech, I'm there for it. I got you. That actually gets me motivated.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm jealous of you because you can kind of do both. You can get in front of a crowd and lay some stuff down. But you can just walk in a room, and I don't know if you are this way or you just fake it good. I don't know. But you seem to really be able to just put people at ease, and people genuinely like you pretty quickly.
So
what is that crap?
So if it makes you feel any better, I also hate meeting new people and doing the stranger thing. I hate it. It's absolutely horrible. It's terrible.
But you're really good at it.
So good at faking it. and I think the reason for it is, one, because I had mom, and that was her whole thing. She could do that all day long, and she trained me.
Yeah, she didn't fake it, though.
But all, like, I don't know, when I was, like, 15 or 16, I learned that, oh, if I can make this person smile within, like, 3 to 5 seconds,
Done. Boom,
they will give me anything I want. And so that was really, really, it was super helpful.
You little manipulator.
Okay, well, is it really manipulating if I come up, shake your hand, make a joke, and then ask you to help me with my Eagle project? How manipulative is that? You can say no.
It's a good thing you don't turn to the dark side, man.
Yeah, I mean, if I just decided to go and lead a cult, then I could probably do some crazy things, but that's not really my MO.
Okay, well, the ladies, they're glad to hear that.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Koresh is that. He puts people at ease. He's very disarming. He's pretty quickly in a place where he'll talk about religion after he meets you. And when you meet somebody you don't know that well, as soon as you get to religion, everybody's like, oh, man, this is going to go bad. Because religion makes people mad.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't come across that way from him. It's disarming.
Mm-hmm.
It's calm. He's got long hair. He's wearing t-shirts or jean jackets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't look like the preacher, the youth pastor. Well, I don't know. He just looks chill.
Yeah.
And then he happens, because the guy can recite Bible books,
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean he does. Hi, I'm glad to meet you. My name's David. Let me tell you Exodus 12 through 14. That's not a thing. He's able to talk about religion without sounding super preachy.
Yeah.
And just be like, yeah, you should come check it out or come hang with us or mm-hmm. come do something. That's it. that's a different vibe to get people into those kind of groups. Mm-hmm. Most people that want to control you do some specific things.
Yeah.
Should we segue and just go to what some of those are?
Sure.
Okay. In my research, and it all started with that combating cult mind control with Hassan, reading his book, but lots of other research and reading I've done and watching a gazillion documentaries. One thing that should always be a danger sign, okay? If you're doing something with a group of people that consistently doesn't let you sleep, if it disrupts your sleep in a meaningful way, that's a danger sign. If I go out and hang with my friends and I pull an all-nighter, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
That's you choosing to hang out with your friends.
Uh-huh.
If we go to a convention or something, and we're up all day, but we're also up all night, except for 2 or 3 hours, for multiple days in a row, that's probably not an accident.
Huh.
When you lack sleep, what happens?
You lose judgment.
You do. You lose judgment. Your brain doesn't move as fast. Tell me if I'm wrong. You also become more apt to express emotion, to feel empathetic emotion. If you haven't been asleep in 2 days and somebody's really sad and starts crying, you're more likely to start crying with them.
I mean, I believe that, yeah.
If they get really excited and happy about something, you're more likely, because the lack of sleep diminishes all the little barriers you set up to make sure you're only using those emotions by choice.
Huh. Okay.
So lots and lots and lots of religious groups that use control have some part of their, you're just learning about them, you're just going to them, where you're up for 2 or 3 days. And then on that third day, you have an experience. You feel something that's just overwhelming to you. And it could be joyous, it could be sad, but it's really intensified. That doesn't mean that nobody who ever stayed up from 2 days felt the hand of God.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not here to diminish that. I'm a religious person. But it's hard to tell the difference between the hand of God and a contrived event where people are pushing that same emotion they want from you all around you, and you get sucked in when you have a lack of sleep.
So they can, like, keep you awake for a couple of days and then, like, emotionally peer pressure you into this feeling?
Yeah. That's crazy. And you don't recognize it as that. You just think, I was at this conference and I was around all these people and I felt such an overwhelming amount of love. Or I
and
felt...
Then you get
whatever.
You get this big, like, camaraderie feeling with everyone.
Yes.
And then I bet as soon as that's done, you get to go to bed.
Shocking, right? No, that's often part of it. So that's something to watch out for.
Okay.
If you're in an abusive relationship and your partner never lets you get proper sleep, there's probably some control element in that.
Okay.
All the crazy serial killers who trap, I mean, it's usually women, but it's not always. I mean, Dahmer did guys, right? So who trap people and keep them alive for a while and then kill them, they mess with their sleep patterns. One way or the other. It might be the weirdo dude who locked you in a box under the bed for 20 hours a day.
Yikes.
That messes with your sleep pattern.
Yeah.
Most of the other ones are keeping you awake for these long extended times and distorting your sense of time.
Gosh, that probably doesn't help with the Stockholm syndrome.
Okay, I'm glad you said that.
Okay.
What did American CIA people do to suspected terrorists to try and interrogate them during the Gulf War, the Second War, the Afghan War?
Keep them awake forever?
Keep them awake for a few days. It changes you. So that's a thing. If the CIA uses that as an interrogation method, and it has reasonably a similar result of, like, waterboarding gets all the views, right? Yeah. Oh, it's so terrible. Sleep deprivation's been used by the Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans.
I don't know if you're going to tie this in later on, but the FBI also tries to do the sleep deprivation.
Oh, do you think I'm going to tie that in? Do you think I'm going to tie that in? There's a reason we're talking about this.
This all just clicked for me.
So it's not designed to make anybody think more clearly. Okay?
Definitely not.
That's one of them. Another one. And this is where we can get in trouble with, you know, that first date. What are you trying to do? I want this woman on this first date to feel like she's awesome. If I make her feel awesome, she's probably going to like me.
Probably.
So I'm going to compliment everything.
Yep.
I'm not lying, but I'm probably not going to miss a chance.
Yeah, you're laying it on thick.
Because I want people to talk nice about me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a teacher. There's kids every year, oh, Mr. Andrews, you're my favorite. And there's also kids every year, they're like, I hate you, I hope you die. Thankfully for me, there's more of one than the other.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I got a letter from an email from a former student yesterday, it's the middle of summer, I wasn't expecting this.
Yeah.
Made my whole day. Talked about, oh, you were such a great teacher. You made me feel good. Giving me compliments about what I did. I love that. I felt good afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a common practice in destructive groups that want to control you to just love bomb somebody. That's what Hassan calls it in his book, love bomb them.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to bring a new person to your thing. You almost always meet somebody one-on-one. And then if immediately they're trying to introduce you to a larger group,
mm-hmm.
and everyone in that group spends way more time complimenting you about whatever than they do talking about themselves at all, that's potentially a problem.
Yeah.
Because we like to be complimented, but also conversations usually reciprocal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk about you. You talk about me. We go back and forth. If everyone's listening to every word I ever say, and the only thing they're telling me is more questions to keep me talking, so I'm never learning about them,
mm-hmm.
or compliments to make me feel good,
mm-hmm.
could mean they just, you know, they like you, they want you to stay around, but that could also be a problem.
Yeah.
Okay, and here's where the line gets weird. Like, if you're sitting in church and somebody new comes in, you know, it's nice. Let's go meet them. Hi, how are you?
Yeah.
What do you do? It's good to see you. Thanks for coming today. Right? That's being welcoming,
mm-hmm.
and that's being kind. But somewhere there's a line where if I'm actually trying to make you feel welcome and kind and part of the group, there's going to be give and take.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm only gushing at you and taking information about you from you, that's not really welcoming. That's something else. So you see this a lot in relationships where the guys that end up being hostile, abusive, murderers, any of that, get really good at this. I'm going to meet you and I'm going to compliment everything. And oh, I felt so good whenever he was around. He just made me feel great. And then it changed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want people out there to be like, I better be careful. This guy who's a history teacher just said I had a nice smile. Son of a gun probably wants to kill my family. I'm not saying that. But lots of these control techniques
mm-hmm.
are where we're going to take something that seems pretty normal and good and just ramp it way over, and all of a sudden it's not as good anymore.
Yeah.
So lack of sleep. Love bombing. And here's the next one. I think is pretty important. If a group is, or a person is trying to put themselves in a position to control you, they will most often want to get you on their turf instead of yours.
Mm-hmm.
So if this was a dating situation, hey, let's go out. If we only ever go out at my house and I never come to your house or meet your family or see your dog or cat, that's weird.
Yeah.
There might be a reason for that. And lots of groups that are actively recruiting to try and get new people. They'll try and get you out of where you are. Hey, we're having this convention. We're having this meeting in the next town over. It's not, they're not going to be like, hey, we're going to have this meeting and it's in Montreal, Ontario, Canada. People are like, I ain't leaving the country to have a meeting with you. We just met. But it's close. So we live in a, you know, Pocatello. Hey, we're having a meeting. It's up in Idaho Falls. For us, that's 45 minutes away. Mm-hmm. It's not our home turf. Mm-hmm. But it feels like it's still close.
Yeah.
And so you go, and then now you're at the mercy of, I don't know the people that are here.
Yeah.
I may or may not have transportation or know my way around. Mm-hmm. It just gives a lot of advantages to the people around you who may already know all those things.
Yeah.
And the last one I can think of that I think matters, and again, I see this a lot in church, used in what seems like a good way, but it's easy to take too far. If you show up for a group and the only other people you're ever with are other really new people to the group, if it's just you new guys and you don't get to kind of, I'm going to check it out on my own, yeah, but all you new guys are always together and there's other groups elsewhere that aren't like that, mm-hmm, that's maybe a problem.
Yeah.
Because if I'm in this group where nobody really knows exactly what's going on or how it works, I don't even know the questions to ask.
Yeah.
And if I do ask, oh, I'm curious about that too. Now it seems like I'm fitting in.
Yeah.
But if I'm out on my own, I might see something or hear something that causes me to question what's going on.
Yeah, you're almost like being herded at that
point. Yeah, really, you are. And again, you know, if I'm on a college tour and they're, well, okay, now we're going to go over here and look at this, or I'm looking at an art museum. That's different.
Yeah.
And I guess that maybe leads us to the last one, right? You should be able to walk away from something even very early on or very late on relatively easily. Mm-hmm. If I'm at your little meeting, I met you personally, you invited me to come see your friends, I, you know, did whatever for a little bit of time, and I'm going to try and leave now, and you're really pushing that I stay or really trying to force a commitment that I come back, that should be a red flag.
To me, that sounds like, you know, when you're that, like when you sign up for cable, right?
Yeah.
You sign up for cable, you sign, yes, your contract and say that you're going to do it for 12 months.
Yep.
And then, you know, we'll say that you can get out with, you know, with no fine within the first 30 days. But on day 31, you're like, oh, you know, I kind of want out. And they say, oh, well, you got to pay for the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, obviously a contract is different from a social engagement.
Yeah.
But if you are out with people and you say, hey, you know, I'm not really feeling this, I'm going to go, and someone is trying to keep you there, like, oh, yeah, but, you know, we were going to do this thing and I really want you to see it. You know, like you can kind of tell when someone's stringing you along like that.
Yeah. So that's, I agree 100%.
But that feeling, like when you can't get out of your contract, if you feel like you can't get away, that's a bad sign.
Yeah. And it might just be, hey, I'm feeling three or four of these happen at once. Now that's where we're getting into red flag territory. Oh, yeah. Right.
Uh-huh.
Because if, oh, this is happening, I don't know, that makes me at least pay attention. But, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But now three or four of these things, that's almost certainly not an accident.
Yeah.
That's not random. Which is the whole other thing, that most of the time these type of groups that want to control you, like everybody else in the group understands, hey, we need to get this person, mm-hmm, to here, make them stay long enough to go through this experience and hear this speaker, and then you've got to follow up with them, mm-hmm, for the next month, and they're going to be in.
And then we're going to keep them up for 3 days.
Well, the 3 days probably happens before that.
Probably.
So, you know, there you go.
Yeah.
Those are some of the biggies.
So if you've noticed three or more of these things.
Your church, call this number.
You may be in a cult.
You can, and that's what's funny. Like in a church, you can notice all of those by degrees.
Yeah.
And you have to ask yourself, okay, is this an overzealous church member?
Uh-huh.
Or is this their actual policy?
Uh-huh.
And that's where I really think that walk away thing becomes real, right?
Yeah.
Like if somebody calls me and says, hey, been a week since we saw you at the thing. What'd you think? Mm-hmm. Would you like to come back again? You're invited if you would.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at that.
Yeah.
I'll say yes or I'll say no. Or if they send me a letter, that's a thing too. When I was, I don't know, 20, I stopped and I bought a copy of the book Dianetics, and that's Church of Scientology stuff, mm-hmm. L. Ron Hubbard, at the Denio's auction for a dollar, right?
Uh-huh.
They had their little e-machine, whatever version it was back then. I wasn't that interested in that. But I'm genuinely curious about your what you do and what your thing is.
Yeah.
And I will read your book because I figure that's going to tell me what you're about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm genuinely interested in that. And they had me fill out one of the little cards, you know, name, address, phone number. I don't even think email is a thing yet, so pre-email at that point. I got mail from the Church of Scientology all the way until we moved to Boise.
To Boise?
Yeah. So I moved twice in Sacramento, once to West Sacramento. I mean, I moved several times, and they kept finding me. That's weird. We're talking over the course of 20 years. You're still sending me letters. Hey, we've got this. You could buy this. You could take this class. I have never attended any kind of a Scientology meeting. So bear that in mind. I'm not just here to bash them. But that felt really weird to me that it's 20 years of you hunting me down and not like asking, hey, how you doing? Do you want to come to a thing?
Mm-hmm.
But sending me this order form to buy your stuff or sign up for your class, which all costs money.
Yeah.
I did not personally find that inviting.
Mm-hmm.
It's my own fault. I signed up for the card.
Now you know better.
I guess. I learn lessons. It just takes me a while sometimes. So there's kind of some psychological, sociological background. Just to be clear, I am not a psychiatrist or psychologist. I don't believe you are either.
Definitely not.
And, you know, I would really encourage you. I think that Under Combating Cult Mind Control is a really good book. Hit that up. I, this most recently, a few weeks ago, re-listened to it. It's on, I don't even know what version, on Audible. Nice. Love Audible.
Love Audible. And we are not sponsored by Audible, but we would love to
hit that up. Yeah, you know, once we get up to 4 viewers on YouTube,
yeah,
and we crack that,
so
60 mark on the podcast.
So don't forget to like and share this video. Smash that like
button. Smash the like button. Subscribe. I see those guys say that too. We'll have to come up with a thing to be like all the cool kids.
Yeah.
We could be like Mr. Beast. Isn't he
Doesn't
the super
he have
rich?
Like a candy bar?
I guess. I don't know. Something.
He does some stuff, I think.
I think he makes money with
the
interwebs.
I think
he has the
interwebs candy bar.
Oh my gosh. I got to
It's like $7 a bar.
I want it.
It's not. It's insane.
I am not going to be happy until I have these nuts in my... Never mind. Anyway. See, without children here, it's
we
easy
can
for this...
We say whatever we want. It's unfiltered.
This podcast can go sideways pretty quick.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So let's set up the Branch Davidians as a group. They're not really big.
No.
This peaks out at, you know, 100 people. And it takes a bunch of years to get that big.
Mm-hmm.
David Koresh does some other things that are really smart. Like if you think of a church as a business, what could I do to make people want to come? I have a really good command of the Bible. He already had that.
Boom.
He went to Israel.
That's cool.
That's baller.
Yeah. That's
so much
cool.
Of the Bible's based there. You're going to be able to talk about it. You know, like me talking about Lexington Green, it's different. I've been there now.
Mm-hmm.
I still talked about it before, but it's kind of cool because I've been there. I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So he did that. He never got a giant following there in Texas. He got a lot of his followers from other places. He would go to LA once in a while and kind of hit the music scene there. He went to Australia for a while.
That was like the whole time that he was still kind of, you know, kind of like coming up in the church. He was like playing in a band.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
and people know him, and the local people are like, yeah, you know, he's kind of weird. He's a religious guy, but nobody really has anything bad to say about him.
Yeah.
He's just, you know, kind of odd, but nobody thinks he's anything but harmless. That, you know, by the accounts we've got. And over the course of some years, you know, he decides to move to Mount Carmel, which, again, that's not because he wants to be a Frappuccino Sunday.
No.
Not wrong Carmel. Mm-mm. This is based on a biblical term.
That's caramel.
Right, right. And he wants to build this place to gather people in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't inherently have a problem with let's gather people here and let's kind of, you know, there's that whole hippie, let's have our little utopia.
Well, especially if you recognize it as like, oh, you know, like we are a church and we are growing. We want a real like church house. He kind of took it like a step further and said, oh, we want, you know, a place where all of our members can stay.
Just stay and live here.
Yeah, you know.
And it was never.
Get away from everything else.
It was never that nice.
No.
It was pretty low-buck building.
Mm-hmm.
Like, being opulent, being well-to-do, you know, driving around in Mercedes or something, this wasn't his vibe.
No.
And the people that joined the church weren't looking for that, like, superficial, we're in this group, and they're so well-off. You know, that wasn't what they were looking for either. I think it's the humble look that helps, because David's living there in the same way they are.
Yep.
I mean, he has a car, so he drives to town a little more than some of the people who don't have a car. But that would be the same for anybody who had a car who didn't.
Yep.
And over the course of some years, that number gathers, well, roughly to 100, and people come and join. And he invites them to stay for a while, a day, a two. You should stay as long as you want. Mm-hmm. But it's important to me. People leave.
Yeah, people go.
And throughout this whole time, there's not like the people who do leave, even before the Waco massacre, like trash him. They trash him in a way where you're like, what happened with you here? Because this seems like you make it sound like, you know, you've been held against your will and robbed of all your money and everything was taken and they renamed you some other name and stole your... I mean, but it really looks like, the evidence suggests, even the people who did leave and feel that way, they just left.
Yeah.
There wasn't some armed guards keeping you there.
Uh-huh.
The one problem that happens with any religious group that uses control is if they are the ones that have what you need to get to heaven and you choose to leave,
then you're screwed.
Then you're not going to make it to heaven. So that can be a real powerful motivator.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's true of almost every religion. Like, hey, if you're here and you're doing good, you're going to make it and you're going to go to heaven. Now I'm dealing with my eternal forever.
Uh-huh.
So it is hard.
If I leave, I need to be able to find this someplace else.
Right.
Because otherwise I'm screwed. And when you are, you know, the Branch Davidians and you're the only place and you only got 100 people, you only got one option.
Yeah. Now, over time, what happens at the compound does get a little more controlling.
Mm-hmm.
Because David can sit there and quote entire books of the Bible, sometimes when he starts preaching, he's going to lay it down for like 10 or 12 hours. He can bring a sermon for 12 hours. I like to listen to some people. I can't think of anyone I want to listen to for 12 hours.
That's too long.
And could you leave? Yeah, you could. But I did get the sense that there's a communal, like, why are you going to bed when when David's sitting here preaching to us?
Okay, here's my question for you.
I'm ready for you.
Could, if our viewers wanted it, our listeners at home wanted the 12-hour podcast episode, would they get it?
If we're going to do like a marathon run?
Yeah, like the Omnibus.
The Omnibus? Okay, so someday if this is ever even a little bit successful, We should do like a Patreon or something.
Uh-huh.
Fundraiser. We're going to do the marathon podcast and see how long we can go. But I'm telling you, if we make it 2 or 3 days, we might be trying to control each other's mind.
It'll be like in Beef. Man, we just like mind swap.
I could make a day, I think, pretty easy. Other than my mouth gets really dry. Like we've been at this too long already. for not even getting to where the raid starts, we're 1 hour 15 in, and my mouth's starting to dry out a little bit. But
we do have a gift to just run it a little long.
Well, I mean, there's nobody here to tell us what to do.
That's true. Everybody's gone.
Katie ain't coming through here like, Daddy Jacob. We get to be us. So it gets a little weird in that way.
Yeah.
And how it seems to manifest itself is the number of people who come and check it out. Because mm-hmm. this becomes a daily thing. It's not like, hey, we're going to surprise them and be all cool for a week. Mm-hmm. And then on Sunday, punch them with the 12-hour thing. Yeah. This starts to get, you're going to get these marathon preaching sessions daily.
Yeah.
So you get, the new people coming are like, whoa, that's a little much.
Yeah.
It actually kind of weeds out some of the potential converts, I think. That makes it hard to go, well, how controlling is it? Yeah. Like, it wasn't false advertising.
Uh-huh.
You saw what you got. You were like, no thanks, and you left.
Mm-hmm.
But they do want to take care of the people that are there, mm-hmm. and nothing's free, and you're out in the middle of desert nowhere in Texas.
Yep.
So, you know, I think people who start communes in, like, Oregon,
mm-hmm.
or California, that's smart. There's nice places there that are pretty. The weather's pretty good.
Yeah.
Man, you're out in the middle of nowhere, doggone Texas. It's hot.
Yep.
You could get tornadoed. Why are we building our utopia there? And so they need money to finance things. They don't eat well. Food control mm-hmm. is another big form of control. But it's hard to say they don't eat really well because he's trying to control them with food. It seems like they don't eat that well because they're all broke.
Yeah.
Because they're living this commune lifestyle, but there's no income attached to it.
Yeah.
David Koresh is not out there trying to, like Jim Jones
mm-hmm.
with Jonestown, he would go out and recruit senior citizens
mm-hmm.
so that he could get their Social Security checks.
Mm-hmm.
He would try and recruit rich people who see what he's doing with working amongst different races, and people thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
He'd try and get them to join so that he could get to their money.
Yeah.
Okay, this is... Koresh is not really trying to fleece people that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to do something to make money, and they do some, like, car mechanic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Low level, they run a shop or whatever. And people donate to the cause, but it was never... I mean... If you've seen the pictures of Waco, once it's the more close-up ones, the compound there, dude, this is not the megachurch,
no.
Okay? There's nothing fancy going on. Most of that stuff's just plywood and 2x4s.
Yeah.
Like, it was miserable in the winter because they're not properly insulated. Stuff's not built to code either, but,
yeah.
You know, you're trying to save a buck. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways they start to make money, and this really gets... some stuff going, is they're buying and selling guns at gun shows.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know. It's never super clear what the gun send-off was. We know that Koresh and the guy who wanted to lead the church, they had their little shootout thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you grew up in Texas, I'm guessing it's like growing up out here in Idaho, right? Like, guns are a thing.
Yeah.
So you know about them. We vibe on guns out here a little different than they do in, like, New York or California.
Yeah.
But back then, that you could make good money on the gun show circuit.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of stuff is legal.
Mm-hmm.
And so they buy guns and sell guns. If I'm remembering right, one of the members was like, oh, we should do this. He had sold and bought a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, okay, this worked with the lifestyle they're leading.
Yeah.
They start buying all these guns. And they sell a lot of guns.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is this legal?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it just a base level, can this group buy and sell guns? Yeah. Yeah. There's not a specific part of the concept that's illegal.
Yeah.
And what gets them into trouble is the craziest thing, because it's not illegal either. Okay. What seems to be the point where people go, hey, we've got to not just, we've heard stories, they're kind of weird, maybe we should check it out, maybe not. Mm-hmm. What seems to be the event that makes people go, no, we got to do something, is it's about our dear friend UPS.
Oh, man.
The UPS guys making a lot of deliveries out there. Mm-hmm. You know what he's delivering? A lot of gun stuff.
Yep.
Now, back then, you could still ship a gun now, UPS. You have to do it a certain way.
Yeah.
Okay? But you could just ship that stuff back then. Mm-hmm. Different rules, different laws, different time. But when he's getting some stuff together, a box falls open, and a bunch of hulls, which means the outside part of pineapple grenades. So pineapple grenades are like those grenades that U.S. forces used in World War II. Mm-hmm. They've got the little squares. They look a little bit like a pineapple.
Yeah.
So the hulls, which means there's no explosive in them, it's just the outer shell, those fall onto the floor out of this box. And the UPS guy goes, well, that's not normal.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at that. That's not normal.
Yeah.
It's also 1,000,000% legal.
Yeah.
I could buy a pineapple grenade hull right now. Mm-hmm. Because you know what it is? It's not an explosive. It's just a weird shaped
metal
paperweight. But it got people, I think it got people assuming, correct or not, that they got those with the intention of filling them with explosives and making them live grenades. There are accounts that that's what's going on. Mm-hmm. Most of these accounts are by bitter ex-members who have left. Mostly they're by people who've been out for a little while. Mm-hmm. It's a catch-22. Like, I'm not in the group. I don't see what they're doing. So someone who was there can tell me more than I know.
Yeah.
But if you left and you're mad at David Koresh for whatever reason,
say whatever you want.
You might just be throwing fuel on it because, yeah. Hey, I feel like he slighted me personally.
Yeah.
Or maybe he, you know, tried to hit on my wife or girlfriend. That would be a thing. David Koresh seems to have some keep it in your pants problems.
Yeah.
He definitely enjoyed the adult activity. Even, perhaps, when it was not with adults. So that's a problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, you could see where if I go to check your thing out and you know I'm here with my wife or girlfriend and you're kind of, hey, we should hook up. If you hit on her at all, I'd be mad. Mm-hmm. I would, want to destroy you over that. So, again, I don't want to come across like I'm defending illegal activity there. It's always been curious to me how much we let what people who are removed from it, not just because they left, but by time. Mm-hmm. Like, you left 2 years ago, and now you've got all these things to say about, okay, so why'd you wait?
Yeah.
Sometimes people do. Doesn't mean it's true or false, but it just makes me go, okay, do we have more recent intel?
Yeah.
The intel side of this whole thing is a doggone mess. Okay. So they get into looking around. They stake the guy. They do all this stuff. And ultimately, when they talk to the people they talk to, when they do the research they do, they decide that there's enough evidence, and you've got to have enough to convince a judge, mm-hmm. to, you know, we're going to go look and make sure there's no illegal guns in here. We think there is. Mm-hmm. Specifically, they think that the guns they're selling, that they're keeping and they're modifying to be machine guns. Mm-hmm. Okay? You're allowed to sell semi-automatic weapons that are pop, 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 pop as fast as you can pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to sell anything where you hold the trigger and it keeps firing. Mm-hmm. One thing I'll have to look up, and I'll look it up for the next episode. I remember as a kid, there was something called a Hellfire trigger. You pulled the trigger once, and instead of the trigger comes all the way back, the gun goes boom, you pull it a little bit, it goes boom once. You pull it a little bit further, it goes boom twice, you pull it all the way back, you get the third bone.
Okay.
So it's one trigger, but with three different trigger points in the pool.
So it's
so now you get a three-shot burst if you just pull the trigger all the way back.
Okay.
When that came out, this always happens with technology. Technology advances. The laws have to catch up.
Yeah.
So that came out, and they were in Soldier of Fortune magazine. Get your Hellfire trigger. It was briefly a thing. You could buy them legally. And then somebody was like, isn't that a machine gun at that point?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said, yeah. So they changed the law to outlaw that. I don't know the specifics of the law, if they changed the wording of an existing law. Doesn't really matter. My point is that somewhere in this time frame, there were ways that would make a gun act like it was a machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
But it might not actually be technically, definitionally a machine gun.
Yeah.
And that's what they're looking for. Their warrant is specific to look for explosive devices. So we think they're building bombs. Automatic weapons. We think they're illegally modifying semi-automatic weapons to make them automatic, to make them machine guns.
Yeah.
And the one that has, you know, nothing to do with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. That doesn't mean you shouldn't investigate this. This doesn't mean you shouldn't serve a warrant. But it's not their jurisdiction at all. We think he's harming, molesting, raping children.
Yeah.
Okay, that is not an ATF problem.
No.
If those children had come from another state, it might be an FBI problem.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, in the grand scheme of the world, that's a local police issue. And I want to be the first to say, I don't want to split hairs over whose job it is to mm-hmm. take out someone hurting children.
Yeah.
You know, if the child molester gets stopped, I'm for that.
Yeah.
But we do live in a country of laws, and we have procedures. And if you break those procedures, sometimes the person who is doing a crime, like hurting a child, they're going to get away with it because of you. You didn't follow the rules to catch them.
Yep.
So that bothers me. And that'll come into play a little bit. Those are our trifecta of reasons why we need to investigate the Branch Davidians.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Is that a good place to just, hey, here's what's going on. Yep. We've decided.
We've laid the groundwork.
We need to have a legal intervention at this point.
Uh-huh.
We can pick it up from there next time, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Overall, anything else you can think of when you think of cults or people trying to control others or anything? I mean, you seem like you were taking in this stuff I'm laying down, like, oh, I never thought of that. What do you think of when you think of that stuff?
Well, I mean, a lot of the things that you were talking about as far as the control aspect goes, like, I've noticed things like that happening, like, in a more workplace environment.
Yeah, we both work for UPS. It's strange.
We both work for UPS, so it's kind of weird there. But, like, when I was working in sales...
oh, my gosh, yeah.
When new people come on... Sales is all about confidence. So if you are confident in sales, then you will sell more. And so when new people come in, we would love bomb them. And, you know, when I first, you know, entered that field, people were always telling me how awesome I was. Now, granted, I am awesome.
I've always felt
so,
that.
So, you know, it wasn't that big a deal for me. They were just being honest. But, like, if somebody, you know, kind of sucked, then you would work with them for a little bit, get them, you know, to practice their script. And then you would love bomb them, tell them how awesome they are, give them a high five, and send them out to go make some money. And so, like, you know, they're like, it kind of is like, where is the line? Is this, you know, just helping the person out, or is this going overboard? Again, in sales, like, a lot of the times we would go and have team nights every week. And sometimes it felt like you were always there at work. You never had any free time. And a lot of the time there, that's where I would definitely say, like, okay, well, this was definitely, you know, being more on their turf. When all of a sudden, you know, I get this new job and all of a sudden my whole life is this new job and the people there, and I never have time for my family or my friends anymore because I'm always doing stuff with them or I'm always at work. That same type of thing. Like, okay, there's a line somewhere. And that one I definitely feel like was crossed,
okay,
you know, over into the control aspect. So this stuff isn't all about cults and church and, you know, abusive spouses or whatever. Like, keep an eye out for these things in your job. Because if you're having trouble in a job and you're realizing that, you know, you're kind of losing yourself, maybe it's because you are, and it's engineered that way.
Yeah. Let me give you one more thing to think about with those. So think uplift, encourage, persuade, control, wait for it, Coach Harris. We both had Coach Harris for history. It's super fair to say that that guy's uplifting, I think.
I love Coach Harris. He's something else, man.
Is he persuasive?
I mean, yeah, I guess. our Coach Harris's were also like 20 years apart, so.
Which is, yeah, I mean, but it's the same dude.
It is the same dude, but.
And Coach Harris teaching history.
Uh-huh.
And giving you a hard time about your old man, that's different than Coach Harris coaching football.
Oh, I believe that.
I think, but you could think of Coach Mo.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that line between I want to encourage you, I want to persuade you, and I've got to control you.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that totally makes me think of the last thing. Can I please have like 5 more minutes?
Go for it.
Okay, look at this basic psychological point. I've talked about it before on the podcast. I don't remember when. If your actions don't match your thoughts, one of them's got to change. Mm-hmm. And it is almost always easier to change someone's actions and their mind will follow. You see that all the time in sports. Mm-hmm. We're going to do this practice regimen and eventually you're going to start thinking like a winner or whatever. Mm-hmm. You see this in sales. Mm-hmm. We're going to go out and do these techniques and sooner or later you're going to feel like it's just going to be second nature.
Yeah.
Okay, so groups or people that want to control you will definitely try and change your actions. When you were telling me about, I'm in this new town, I'm in this new place, they changed all your actions.
Yep, all of it.
And you could either, in that moment, go, this is all messed up, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could change your thinking so that it did work.
Yeah.
And at least for a while, you changed your thinking. And then I stole you back. Welcome to Idaho.
Heyo.
Well, that's not true, because you only did the... The selling job, what, about a year out there? Was it even a year?
Like a year out there.
Okay, so add that to the mix.
Uh-huh.
That your actions are going to follow, or I mean, your mind is going to follow your actions for most people.
Yeah.
And so if a group or a person wants you to change a lot about what you do, hey, get up at this different time. Don't go to your mom's house on Thursdays anymore. I don't like it when you go to your mom's house. Instead of going to your friends, let's do this over here. You see a crossover. Not only am I getting you off home field advantage, but I'm also changing your actions.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see it all the time with abused people. It doesn't matter if they're kids or adults.
Mm-hmm.
The actions go on and then it starts to feel normal.
Mm-hmm.
It could be good if you're helping somebody train to be an athlete or whatever. But even some of them, it gets like way out there. You know? So be careful. Your actions are the key to your thoughts. Shouldn't be that way. Often is.
I haven't read the book, but I'm willing to bet that if I were to go and read the book Atomic Habits, that's probably all of it.
There you go.
That's just, you're going on, you're talking about this, and my first thought is, oh, that's probably what Atomic Habits is about.
I'm going to add that to the Audible list. I'm going to check that out. When we meet together next time, we are going to talk about the police response to these issues, to the start of the siege and the actual raid. And I don't know if we'll get to when it all goes apart at the end or not. I bet we don't, but we'll see what happens.
Well, we'll see.
All right. Yep. So I guess that's it for now. We're signing off from Waco. We're signing off on April 19th. That's not today's date. That's what we're talking about.
Yep.
And we'll see you next time on History on the Dark Side.